Save Me Thousands is brought to you in part by RP Funding. RP Funding Inc. is licensed and can offer loans in Alabama, Arkansas, Florida, Kentucky, Louisiana, North Carolina, Ohio, Oklahoma, South Carolina, Tennessee, Texas, Virginia, and West Virginia. And is also licensed by the Mississippi Department of Banking and Consumer Finance and by the Pennsylvania Department of Banking and Securities. Office is located at 500 Winterly Place, Suite 300, Maitland, Florida, 32751. Telephone 321-397-4420. RP Funding's nationwide mortgage licensing system ID number is 70168, Equal Housing Opportunity. And Robert Palmer's NMLS ID number is 76197.
Welcome back, and yes, we are Saving Thousands with Robert Palmer right here on the Saving Thousands Radio Network.
So if you only qualify for $1,200 a month and you fall in love with a house that's $13,000, you come back to me, we have to say no because you just don't qualify.
Yeah.
But if you do qualify for the more money but you were just trying to stay conservative, now you have a harder time trying to convince your family and everybody else, well, honey, the mortgage company will give us the loan for $1,300 a month. Why aren't you comfortable with it? Well, dear, I think we should really stick around $1,200. Well, we can get approved for $1,300, though, and the house we love is $1,300. And we see a lot of people fall into this trap, and they end up buying more house than they're comfortable with. They can afford it, but now they have to make lifestyle changes. And not everyone's willing to make those lifestyle changes, which is how people can get in trouble with owning a home.
Back to basics, Robert. When we go to secure a loan, the word lock comes up, and many people are totally familiar with the process. But if they make the wrong choice, it can cost them, right? The first thing they hear from the loan company is, oh, you should never lock.
So they tell you this and they convince you to float. And as soon as you agree to float, you've now lost all your power. Because, again, they quote you this great rate up front. And they convince you to float. Right, Rob, put yourself in this situation.
Right.
You're a home buyer. You listen to rule number one. You shop around. You're doing good. But then you let the mortgage guy convince you to float. Okay. So now 30 days go by, and it's time to go to closing on your new home. And they say, okay, Rob, we can't float anymore. It's time to go to closing. You have to lock the rate in before you can go to closing.
Uh-huh.
And you know what? My sister's brother's best friend was wrong.
Oh.
Rates did not get better. And in fact, they're much, much worse. And I'm now going to give you a 9% interest rate. What are you going
to
do?
And you're going to ask me to bring more money to close.
What are you going
to
do, Rob? I mean, are
I've
you going to
stay with you? You got me handcuffed.
Are you going to walk away from the dream home? Are you going to walk away from the home that you're in love with, that your wife's in love with, that you've showed the kids and you put the pictures on Facebook and you've enrolled the kids in school and everything? Or are you going to take the ridiculous 9% rate? Now, that's obviously a very outlandish example. No one's going to raise the rate that much. They could. What would you do? I mean, whether they raised your rate to 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 20, if it's the day before closing, what are you going to do?
You're stuck.
You're stuck. You have two choices. Take the higher rate or walk away from the house. And the industry knows that most people will take the higher rate.
And if you walk away,
because they're emotionally attached.
If I walk away, there's also penalties attached, right? I'm going to lose my escrow or I'm going to lose
something.
Absolutely.
You can even get sued by the seller at that point because, see, the thing is you have financing in place. Now, some real estate contracts are written that your financing has to be below a certain rate or else it doesn't qualify. But even that expires with the finance contingency. So it's just a bad situation. So the way to protect yourself from this is simple. Make sure you get the rate lock. Lock the rate in up front. Do not let them convince you to play the float game. Mm-hmm. The only person who benefits from you playing the float game is the mortgage company. Okay? Because remember, it costs us money to lock your rate in. Right? So by locking your rate in up front, we take more risk in the market because I have to lock your rate in. And then if the inspection comes back bad or the appraisal comes in lower and these things, I can potentially have losses in the market. And we have really complex formulas I wrote for our hedging software that I wrote that does all this here at RP Funding. And I think we do it better than most people. So we don't take as much risk. But some lenders have a really high risk, especially when you're dealing with a mortgage broker, because the mortgage broker, the lender doesn't even know if they're actually going to get the loan. So the mortgage broker has to lock the loan with the lender, and then the lender doesn't even know if the mortgage broker really has a file. They've never even met you. And so there's all this cost built into rates around locking. So what mortgage guys figured out is they can make more money if they convince you to float to the end. And then on top of that, they can bait and switch you because they can quote you a really low rate today. Oh, yeah, Rob, we've got the best rate in the country today. Let me give you a 2.2% interest rate. And you say, okay, great, let me lock that in. Well, no, Rob, we shouldn't lock it in. We shouldn't lock that in. We want to let that float. Right, don't ever float. Right, I force every customer to lock in. That's my personal belief. That is one thing I am so passionate about. Right, and it's just such a core part of my beliefs that you do not gamble with this. You do not float your rate. Nothing good can come for the consumer out of floating the rate. And that's why we force everyone to lock in. Even if it costs me business, even if it costs me a customer, I'm going to force you to do what I know is best for you, which is lock your rate in on your mortgage upfront at initial time of application. Because what happens a lot of times is you say, well, if I float and the market gets better, I would get a lower rate. In theory, yes. But what most mortgage companies do is they float you, and if the market gets better, they don't tell you about it, and they just keep the extra money.
Yeah.
All right, this happens every day. When I was in wholesale, so before RP funding, I actually bought loans from mortgage brokers. It's a part of what we did.
Sure.
We bought loans from mortgage brokers. We bought loans from other correspondent lenders. So we would see how they did business and how they took advantage of their clients and what they did. And this whole floating thing, the customer almost never got the benefit of it. They would always leave the customer at the same rate, and they would pocket the difference if the market got better. If the market got worse, then they would jack the customer up higher. If the market stayed the same, they would usually jack the customer up and lie to them and tell them the market got worse. So the simple way to avoid all this, and this is a key part of shopping for a mortgage, rule number one is shop around. And then a sub rule of that is if you are shopping for a mortgage, make sure you can get a written rate lock commitment up front. It's the only way to protect yourself from a bait and switch or from a bad situation down the road is to have that written rate lock agreement up front. And so if a company has some kind of crazy rule, like you can't lock the rate until the third Thursday of every leap year, or you can't lock the rate until the appraisal comes back, or you can't lock the rate until the senior vice president gets back from Hawaii and reviews your file personally. I mean, I don't know what kind of crazy stuff they come up with, but you want a company that can lock your rate in, I would say, within 24 hours of the initial conversation.
This all ties in directly with the Saving Thousands rule number 11. Don't gamble with the essentials. You know, retirement accounts, savings accounts, interest rate locks. These essentials should be safeguarded so you don't get taken. Again, your copy of the Saving Thousands rules is at savingthousands.com. That's savingthousands.com.
I've mentioned a few of the Saving Thousands rules so far on the show, and you know, Robert, these are effective but easy to follow guidelines that can really change people's financial lives.
Let's recap the rules, Rob. We've talked about these. Rule number one, always shop around. All purchases, banks, ATM fees, credit cards, mortgages, life insurance, everything. Car insurance. I could go on and on. Rule number one here on Saving Thousands is always shop around. Rule number two is know your numbers. All right, know your numbers. This is your credit score. We've talked a lot about that this week, how to dispute items, the balances on your cards, the interest rates on your cards, car loans, mortgages, everything. So you've got to know your numbers. All right. Rule number three is the three-day rule. This is the pledge that all of us financial ninjas here on the Saving Thousands Radio Network, before we take on any type of major purchase or before we apply for any type of credit or take out any type of new loan, we are going to think about it for 3 days. All right. This used to be a rule that was used in dating and one that I inaccurately tried to use on my now wife.
Wow.
But it's much better when applied to finance. Not so good when applied to romance. So 3-day rule. We're going to wait 3 days before we make any decisions on a large purchase. And it really does empower you. When you're sitting there with that pushy sales guy, and he's like, you know, when he leans in and he offers you the pen, right? You know, like these 1960s closing techniques. Like, oh, would you like to use my pen or your pen? I don't need a pen at all. Thank you. I'm going to wait 3 days before I make a decision. You know, well, what can we do to get you to commit today? You can't do anything to get me to commit today because I'm going to wait 3 days because I listened to Robert Palmer on the Saving Thousands Radio Network, and I'm going to follow the three-day rule. So it's a good way for you to push off that pushy sales guy. Mm-hmm. It's a good way to push off that clerk in line at the department store who's trying to sell you a high-interest rate credit card. Would you like to sign up for your whatever card today to save 20%? I would love to, but I have to take that pamphlet, go home and read it, and wait 3 days and make a decision. And if I still think it's a good idea, I will come back here and buy more of your glop or whatever it is I'm buying, and I will get the discount then. So that's the 3-day rule. That's the first three rules we talk about a lot. So moving on, maybe some new territories from our listeners. Rule number four is we are not going to abuse credit, but we're not going to fear it either. All right.
Very important.
Don't abuse credit. This is big, you know, but don't fear it either. The solution is not to just have no credit. The solution is not to bury your head in the sand and be afraid of credit. And think that you can get through life with nothing and no credit score, because let me tell you, where maybe 10 or 15 years ago you could, we are moving more and more and more toward a society where the credit score is used in so many parts of your life, from insurance to any type of business financing. I mean, there's just so many ways that score is being used. that you can't ignore it. And you know, we maybe had a chance as consumers to fight this trend. That ship has sailed. It is getting more and more mass appeal to businesses and to all aspects of our life. So we can't be afraid of credit. The other reason is there's ways you can take advantage of credit and you can make money. You can arbitrage. You can, you know, you can take advantage of that 6 months interest free and then invest your money in a mutual fund and make some cash. You can take advantage of that car deal where it's 6 months interest free and put your money to work somewhere else. You can take advantage of those airline miles. You know, I get a couple of nice vacations a year off of my American Express points. And if I was afraid of credit, see, I've got the money. I don't have to use credit. I could pay cash for everything. I could use a debit card for everything. that's another issue we've talked about is the risks of using a debit. I may have to make that a rule, Rob. That just
we need to put that
financial ninjas don't use debit cards. I think I may jump out there and be that bold with it. So all these things, you can't be afraid of credit, right? It doesn't work. And so what I'm going to do here on the show is I'm going to teach you how to use credit to your advantage. That's what we do. But you've got to have it. You can't. A life with zero debt. With zero credit just doesn't work in today's society. Now, I'm not saying be a slave to debt. I'm not saying bury yourself, but you know, there's some great tax benefits to having a mortgage. There's a lot of benefits to using credit cards and then just paying them off every month. If you pay them in full every month during the grace period, you haven't cost yourself any interest, but you're able to take advantage of the miles or the rebates, the protections, right? There's all these great things there. So that's rule number four. Don't abuse credit, but don't fear it either. Rule number five is if you know their tricks, they won't work, right? And so,
I love that.
So for this, you know, I really do believe, and I know from experience that big financial services companies absolutely use tricks to try to confuse us and get us to overspend, get us to not pay our bills on time. You know, we talked about the trick of trying to get consumers to go paperless. You know, they want you to give up getting paper statements and deliver them to you electronically because then they can hide all the disclosures. That's the trick. Because then you don't know how much money you could save by paying it off in 3 years instead of 20 years by only sending in an extra $10 a month. You know, these are the tricks. They want you to sign up for that credit card in line when you're not paying attention, when you're not asking questions like, what's the annual fee? What's the APR? They want you to float that mortgage rate. They want you to not lock in. They want to let you float around out there and flop around as a floater, you know, who has no control of their destiny and give them all the power back. That's one of the tricks. And as a consumer, if we know the tricks, they don't work anymore. They can't trick us if we know what they're trying to do. So rule number five, if you know their tricks, they don't work.
Again, you can access your copy of the 15 Saving Thousands Rules to Success by logging on to savingthousands.com. Now, you'll also find empowering articles on all areas of finance from adjustable rate mortgages to credit cards, mortgages, and refis. You'll also find past editions of this radio show and of Robert Palmer's very popular and very informative daily show, The Money Minute. Okay, Robert, let's get back to those rules.
Rule number six, you've got to spread your knowledge. You've got to educate your friends and family. You know, for so long, money and finance and credit scores was this taboo, and nobody wanted to talk about it. And I think the newer generation, the younger generation coming up is more open to talking about it. You know, that there's no shame there. Why are we afraid to talk about it? And I honestly believe that this fear, this taboo was created by big financial services companies, the financial services industry, because by keeping us from being willing to talk about it, the tricks will work more. They can confuse us more. We don't have the power of our core group and our support group and our friends and family knowing what's going on. You know, no one wants to tell their friends and family they have a bad credit score. But if you told them, then maybe they can help you fix it. You know, they can help you make better decisions. No one wants to talk about where they are financially, how much money they make, all these things in their lives. But if we talk about it, we can make better financial decisions. We can be a financial core group. You know, Rob, when I was a kid, my mom brought home her paycheck in cash and showed me this is what I get every month, this stack of money right here, and I'm going to show you where it goes. And there's a lot of parents that are probably just appalled at that. Why, you would tell your kid how much money you make? You would show your child what your finances looked like? One of the best things that she ever did for me. I mean, if you want to talk about an education and why do I understand so much about this? Well, being exposed to it at a young age and seeing the real world numbers and watching her take the pile of cash, which to me is however old I was, you know, 9, 10, seemed like all the money in the world. and then watching the pile for income tax and the pile for rent or for the mortgage and the pile for the credit cards and the pile for food and the pile for car insurance. And all of a sudden there was nothing left. And that huge pile of money that seemed like to a little kid a fortune was gone. Gone right there in 1 month, gone. And if we don't talk about it, if we don't spread our knowledge, if we don't share this with our friends, if we don't tell our friends about resources like this radio show, and we don't tell our friends about the things we learned and about the rules and to shop around and to wait 3 days and to know our numbers, we're doing them a huge disservice. And so we've got to stop this taboo. We've got to break through. We've got to be stronger consumers. We've got to take back the power. And rule number six is spread that knowledge. You know, share it with your friends and family. Don't be afraid to talk about this stuff. Rule number seven, this is a big one. So rule number seven is if you own or run a business, be transparent with your customers.
Amen.
Right? So if I can reach, I think we have like 100, 120,000 listeners a week here on the Saving Thousands Radio Network. Mm-hmm. So if I can reach 100 or 120,000 people and get them to follow these rules, that's big. But if I can reach some business owners or some business managers, some people who have the power to take their business down a different path, where they encourage their consumer to shop around. They encourage their consumer to rate threes. Imagine if you went to that car dealership and they said, okay, sir, we know you want to buy this car. We want you to go home 3 days and think about it and make sure it's the right decision for you, right? I mean, some sales manager just jumped out of his window just hearing me say
that's
that.
Right.
But, you know, these are the types of things that if businesses buy into, then the other however many million people that don't listen to me can benefit as well. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, rule number seven is about spreading. It's my way to spread this knowledge by encouraging business owners and business managers to run their business like I do in a way that puts consumers first and in a way that reinforces the rules and the principles we teach here on the Saving Thousands Radio Network. Rule number nine is practice what you learn and always learn more. So this is one of yours, Rob. Rob Newton contributed this one. If you don't practice it, what's the point? I mean, if you're not going to do this stuff, if you're not going to shop around, if you're not going to know your numbers, if you're not going to wait 3 days, if you're not going to, you know, refuse to abuse credit, and if you're going to fear credit, and if you don't want to know their tricks, and if you do know them, you're still going to let them pull them on you, then what do you go flip over to classic rock or pop music or something? I mean, why are you wasting your time listening to me if you're not going to put this stuff into practice? So rule number eight is practice what you learn, and then you've always got to learn more. I am a constant student. I can still learn, you know, and I think no matter how big my company is, no matter how much I do and how much I know, I can always learn more. And there's always someone I can learn from. And I'm always reading books and I'm always listening to other shows and I'm always trying to educate myself. And I think that's an important rule. So that's number eight, practice what you learn and always learn more. And then rule number nine is share your successes. So this is different. So sharing the knowledge, right? Sharing the knowledge is about telling other people what's going on and sharing the resources and a way to learn. Sharing your successes is when you then go back and say, hey, you know what? I did some of this stuff and I actually saved some money. This is what sharing your successes rule number nine is all about. Because when your friends and family and other listeners hear that this stuff does work and that you did try it and that you don't have to be a financial guru, you don't have to be the owner of a big company, you don't have to be a mortgage guy, you don't have to be a financial guy, you don't have to be a talk show host on the radio to do these things. Anybody can do them. And so you've got to share your successes because that's what's going to help us spread this culture to other people. Mm-hmm. Because what really makes the whole Saving Thousands charter powerful is when enough consumers are following it that businesses have to change and businesses have to react and businesses have to stop the abusive practices that they've gotten so good at, right? Because we're done as consumers. We're not going to do it anymore. We're not going to put up with it. We're going to follow the rules, and we're going to only want to work with businesses who encourage people to follow the rules, and it's going to be this whole revolution. And so you've got to share your successes. Other people have to be aware and have to know that this is working for you because that's going to be their motivation to do better and to be smarter and to stop being a financial zombie and to stop meandering around out there floating in a raft with no anchor and becoming a financial ninja and making good decisions.
You know, I've known people whose lives were a wreck because of overspending and missing payments. They really had no hope, and they just went from paycheck to paycheck, and they were constantly behind. Then they finally copied those 15 Saving Thousands rules to success and began to put the rules into motion. Now, before long, things began to clear up, and they actually took charge of their money. See, these guidelines aren't theory. They're proven ways to finally become empowered and it can happen with you. Follow the Saving Thousands rules.
Listener Beth writes in, I listen to the show every week, then I share what I've learned with my friends and family. Can you tell me what is escrow?
Escrow, that's a good question. You know, See, this is the little things that I forget about. You know, you do it for so long, you forget what some of the things that you know that the normal average person does not know.
Yeah.
So the whole idea behind escrow is that we're going to pay the taxes and insurance for you out of the mortgage payment. And so what happens is, Rob, obviously, you make your mortgage payment monthly, mm-hmm. right? But taxes, property taxes here in Florida are only due once a year, and that's in November. And then insurance is due usually once a year, and it's on the anniversary of when you got your policy.
Right.
So if we bought your home in March, then your insurance is due every year in March. And so a lot of people all of a sudden get hit with this bill, and it's like all of a sudden they owe $6,000 in taxes or $2,000 in insurance, and not everyone has budgeted accordingly and kept that money out. And so we decided in the mortgage industry it would be helpful if we collected 1/12 of the taxes every month and 1/12 of the insurance every month so that when the bill comes, we pay it instead of the homeowner. Now, some people don't like that, right? Some people want to waive escrow. They want to handle the account themselves. They want to, you know, try to collect interest on it and pay it themselves, and that's fine. The problem is we charge you a little bit higher rate for that because it increases our risk mm-hmm. Because the chance of someone defaulting, and then also we as a lender don't get to make the interest on that money. You know, we have millions and millions of dollars of people's escrow money sitting in an account, and so there's a what we call an escrow waiver cost, right? And so it increases the cost of your loan. Usually it's about an eighth of the interest rate. It's not a huge consideration. In some cases, you know, you can buy it out with a small, like a quarter or a half point of discount to get rid of that escrow waiver cost. But most people take the escrow account. You know, it's one of those things. It's convenient. We take care of it for you. We pay it. And then if you are putting less than 20% down on most loan programs, you have to have an escrow account. Because the idea is if you're putting limited money down, you don't have enough liquid cash laying around that you can handle the big hit for the escrow account, for the escrows once a year to pay your own taxes and pay your own insurance. So I recommend people just let us handle it for them. It's cleaner. It's easier. You can budget monthly instead of worrying about it once a year.
Very good. Very good. Okay, now that we know that. Now, sometimes in calculating when you're going to get your home loan, you might have to put some money up in front, right? Because very, very seldom are you going to buy your home exactly on the anniversary of either the property taxes or the insurance.
Yeah, so the insurance, what happens when you're buying a new home, the insurance you're going to pay for 1 year at closing, and then we're going to collect a two-month cushion to put into your escrow account, right? Mm-hmm. And that cushion is there because taxes and insurance will change a little bit. Things happen, things go wrong. Now, with the taxes, you're absolutely right. Very rarely are you buying a home exactly in November to where we can collect the right amount of taxes. So what happens is we have to figure out how many months of taxes we're going to need. So let's say you buy your home in August, right? And so if you close in August, your first payment is not due. You skip September, right? Because you pay interest in arrears. So when you close in August, and then interest will accrue the entire month of September, and then you'll make your first mortgage payment to us on October 1st, right? So we'll have gotten 1 month from you, and then in November we have to pay the taxes. So we're going to be 11 months short. So the idea is we have to collect all 11 months at the closing, and then you'll receive a tax proration credit back from the seller. So the title company will figure out and say, okay, well, the seller lived in the house through August, so they owe this many days worth of taxes, and they give you a credit back for that. And then we put 11 months worth of taxes into your escrow account. And so again, what it ends up being is about 3 months worth of, you have to put about 3 months in because the seller's putting the rest in. You're going to put about 3 months in, and then we're going to collect the rest as we go so that when November rolls around, we have enough money to pay your taxes, which is really what this is all about, making sure that your taxes get paid on time and that your insurance gets paid on time, because we don't want anyone to have a home with no insurance on it. And us having to force place insurance, so if you do not escrow and you do not pay your insurance and your insurance gets canceled, we then have to force place an insurance policy on you as the servicer, and it's not a very friendly policy. It's not something you want to do. So we really want our customers to keep their insurance current, keep their taxes current, and the easiest way to do that is to let us handle it through the escrow account.
Thank you, Robert. That brings us to the end of the show, but there's more empowering information at the website I mentioned, SavingThousands.com. And you can hear full versions of the Saving Thousands radio show by accessing Robert's exclusive station on iHeart. With all of this information and all of us working for you, we can all save thousands with Robert Palmer.